come to leave the 541st and be sent to...
I can. They were looking for volunteers to go overseas, and I volunteered.
I see. And when did you...
I didn't know I was going to the 82nd, but I volunteered.
Yeah, you could have gone to the Pacific or to one of the... other divisions, the 101st or one of the
I don't even know where the 101st was fully activated by that time. I don't know. I guess they were, but
yeah.
I think
now about when was that?
By the way, I remember one thing.
Uh-huh.
At the time I was ready to leave to go to jump school in Fort Benning.
Uh-huh.
That's the time they shut down our planes. Some of our planes going into Italy.
Oh yeah, going into Sicily, the 504 was shot up by.
Yeah.
That would have been July 12th.
Uh-huh. And that's about the time that I had signed up and went to go to jump school. And I read an article in the paper. And at that time, we were thinking of washing out the jump, the paratroopers.
Yeah, they talked about...
Boy, that sort of grabbed me.
Yeah, all that work and everything that everybody had done could have gone down the toilet if Bradley and Eisenhower hadn't have decided to keep the division and divisions intact. Now, you arrived in Northern Ireland about what time? Was it about December of 43?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you,
I was overseas. I got overseas right around the holidays, right around Christmas.
I see. And what do you recall about being taken and assigned to Company C of the 505?
Well, I think I told you when we got to Ireland, England there, we were standing, a bunch of us were, just told they were going to go to the 82nd.
Uh-huh.
And I told you, this guy in a leather jacket come by, and here he is, two-star general, was General Ridgway.
Uh-huh.
And he stopped and asked that what I did and all that. I said, well, I'm an infantryman. He said, good, we could use a rifleman, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That really endeared me. You're not used to seeing two-star generals. You're not used to seeing any general.
Sure. Now, that happened when you were in England?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you were actually sent to England after Northern Ireland, and that's where you were assigned?
No, that's where I came in. I was sent to Ireland. I was sent to Cookstown.
Uh-huh.
That's where they sent the group that came in with me.
I see. And then
that's where the 82nd was, at that time.
Yeah, but you didn't join them until they had moved over to England, right?
Yeah, no, I hadn't been assigned yet.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me about, your arrival there at the 505 and being assigned to
Company C. Well, I worked for the government. I think I mentioned before I went into service.
Uh-huh.
And I had worked with some guys who were in World War One. And I used to idolize these guys. Say, boy, so proud that they were soldiers and fought in the war.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way I felt. When I saw those guys, they had just pulled out of Italy.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't make anything of it. But to me, they were heroes.
Oh, sure. Well,
I don't think they ever mentioned a thing about conflict. Nobody ever talked about things like that. You just didn't talk about it, mm-hmm. or brag about it or anything like that.
Well, what I've found is combat soldiers never have to brag. You guys are the ones that have lived it, and there's no need to make stuff up or to brag, because you guys are the real deal. Now, who do you remember meeting first? In Company C, did you meet Captain Stefanich or
Captain Stefanich and some of the guys that went with to England,
Uh-huh.
But I think I mentioned it to you. The way they treat you when you join. They asked me if I had a pass, and I said no, I haven't had a pass in a long time. You know, just keep got done to go. I said, how'd you like to go to Belfast for a couple of days? And I got a couple, got together, and along they got me a pass to go to Belfast, and I didn't have any money. They gave me $100.
Wow.
You know, that's the kind of guys they were.
Now,
do anything for you.
Now, that was that right after you arrived?
Yeah.
I see. And when you got back, where were you assigned? Whose platoon were you in?
We were still in Cookstown, and I was assigned to Company C.
Okay. Now, whose platoon were you assigned to in Company C? Were you in Lieutenant Sanders or Lieutenant, that would have been Johnson. I think you told me Lieutenant Johnson's platoon, right?
Well, Sanders was there, and I just happened to find some of the names of the officers. I don't know whether you had them all. Would you like to list them now?
I think I've got them. There was Stefanich and Tallarday and Sanders and Johnson and
Heckman was the commander of the.
The 505. Yes.
Lieutenant Haupt. HAUPC.
Uh-huh.
Lieutenant Haupt. HAUPT is his last name.
Uh-huh. And I'm trying to remember, Brownlee was one of the other lieutenants.
Yeah.
And
Tallarday was executive.
There was a one that began with Lieutenant.
And it was Seeker?
There was a one that began with a G that. That was. One of the platoon leaders too, Gessimer, Gensimer or something like that. Gensimer, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, now you Gessimer, but he wasn't in our. As far as I know, he wasn't in my company.
Now, he
was probably in the 505.
Now, when or who were some of the guys in your squad that?
Oh, a whole bunch. You're very right.
Sure. I mean, I'm recording all this, so.
Jesse Cruz.
Uh-huh.
Dutch Schultz.
Uh-huh.
Kleiser.
Uh-huh.
Lyle Corr.
Uh-huh.
Alan Langdon.
Wow. Great group of guys.
Patridge.
Uh-huh.
Clydehine.
Uh-huh.
These guys were all rough. I think Clydehine was about as rough a guy as you want to see, especially Lyle Corr.
Especially who?
Kohler? Yeah.
Oh.
His uncle was used to play bad guys in a movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, and who was the who was your squad leader?
I think it was Vanimo. You know, it's amazing. I got all these, and I know most of them, but I'm trying to figure out. Well, I think it was Ray Holbert.
Uh-huh.
Here. I saw Mahoney.
Uh-huh.
He was with them all the way from, some of these guys were all the way from Newley. Ray Halbert.
Uh-huh.
Joe Petty. Sergeant Withers, Sergeant Reeves.
Uh-huh.
Sergeant Buford.
Have you got a list of these guys?
Yeah.
Wow, I'd love to get a copy of that.
Oh, I'm just reading it from where I wrote it down.
Oh, so I'd like to get a copy of that list that you wrote. Now,
but they're still Private Stout.
Uh-huh.
O.G. Garrison.
Uh-huh.
Matthew Warwick.
Uh-huh.
First Sergeant Canise.
Uh-huh.
Lee Byer. Cook, Alva Cook,
uh-huh.
Sergeant Regal, Private Humanich,
uh-huh.
PSC Smith. That's it.
Well, you got a whole list there that, like I say, I'd like to get a hold of.
Well, most of these guys are real good friends of mine. Oh, very close.
Sure. Now,
did you get all the ushers?
Yeah, I think.
Fury, did you get Captain Fury's name? Well, he became captain afterwards.
Yeah, we'll go through that here in a little while. Tell me about the training that you guys did getting ready for your jump into Normandy.
Well, I did a lot of night training because the jump was a night jump.
Yeah.
Did a lot of night training, hiking and things of that type, mainly conditioning.
Yeah.
It was more conditioning than anything else.
Did you guys spend much time on the rifle range or?
Nah, not there.
Yeah. Now, you guys were taken to the airfields on the 29th of May and sealed in. And at that time, they began the briefings, and
yeah.
You guys started studying sand tables and that kind of stuff. What do you remember about all of that?
Well, you go through that. You know, you study that, but mainly I found out one thing in combat.
Uh-huh.
Unless you're one of the top guys, you don't you're fighting.
Uh-huh.
They're shooting at you, you're shooting at them, they're throwing their ammunition at you, and you're throwing it at them.
Yeah.
But you don't go, you get talked to, and you know, they give you maps and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you where you're supposed to jump, but a lot of times when you jump, you know, you go through the school when they teach you how to go right, go left, and how to guide the parachute. You can't do that in combat. You're loaded down with equipment.
Yeah.
And all you can see is the, I remember in that jump, all I could see was the ACAC and the chaser bullets.
Yeah, we'll get to that here in just a second now. As the date grew closer to the jump, were the guys feeling pretty confident or?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
In fact, everybody was so excited to go. They were overstrength for a while right before Normandy, and some of the guys who couldn't go actually more or less cried. You know, they wanted to go with the guys.
Now, you guys were originally supposed to leave on the evening of the 4th and jump early in the morning of the 5th.
Yeah, I know.
But it got rained out, and so the next day...
I'll tell you what I remember about that.
Okay.
I remember reading the Stars and Stripes or whatever it was, and here, the whole write-up is in the paper.
Gee.
I said to myself... Boy, the Germans would love to have this. I'm sure they got a hold of it somehow.
Now, the next evening on June 5th, did Major McGinty give you guys a pep talk before you loaded on the planes?
Well, they always give you a pep talk, you know. Mm-hmm. Actually, you're not listening yet. You know, your mind is on going, getting in their plane, getting out, jumping, and being there.
Now, your assignment was as a rifleman in a rifle squad. Was that?
Yeah, that's what I was.
Now, that evening, why don't you talk me through the time that you took to get. Your last meal, and then get shoot it up, and then loading the plane, and just taking me all the way through the jump.
That night at a jump, we went to a movie at the air base there.
Uh-huh.
Took us to a movie, and I'll tell you one of the things I remember. They were playing the Air Force song, and all we when they would hit that part where nothing could stop the Army Air Force. We all used to holler out, except the ACAC. But one other thing is, the guys, they all had, I don't know where they got, you know, rubbers, condoms.
Uh-huh.
They blew them up and were bouncing them around all over the movie show.
Yeah, I've heard them do
that. Having fun, that's all.
Now, do you remember the last meal that you had that the Air Corps fed you guys before you got...
No, I don't. I don't remember what I ate or anything. I don't remember that.
What do you remember about putting on all your gear and shooting up?
For that, you put it on usually with your own guys, and they help you, and you help them get put the stuff on, because it's a little awkward to put all that junk that you have to carry on there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned,
yeah,
I guess it's about
45, 50
pounds at least.
Oh, yeah, plus your shoe, that's another 40 pounds.
Yeah.
And now, tell me about loading up, you know, getting into the plane and the takeoff and the flight over to Normandy.
Yeah, all I did was, remember getting into the plane and jumping out. Yeah, I mean, the flight in, actually, it was at night, so you can't see anything.
Yeah. Well, did anyone...
I know we came in low.
Did anyone have to help you in the plane? That's what I was...
No.
I see. Nobody
had to help anybody in the plane.
Some guys were so loaded down that they had to get somebody, you know...
You're loaded down, and it's a load, but you carry it. Yeah. Everybody carries their own load.
Yeah. Now, tell me... about the jump itself and what you remember as you went out.
Well, as I say, you get the order to stand up, line up, and you go out. But the only thing I remember about that is the plane came in very low because I don't know why. And we had to jump lower. We jumped lower than we should have.
Uh-huh.
And when I came in, I came in fast right through a hedgerow.
Uh-huh. Gee. Did you injure yourself or
knocked a couple of teeth out?
Oh, gee. Were you?
That's it.
Were you bleeding pretty bad from?
No. Just knocked them out. And that was it.
Gee.
You don't worry about anything.
Now, did you land pretty much in the?
Where we were supposed to?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were all together. That's all I could say. Zeitner and that whole bunch of you in there. From the word go, we were together.
Uh-huh. Now...
I know if you read the books and all, they tell you, you know, they were scattered all around. Some of them were lost. That wasn't the way with us.
Yeah. Well, most of the 505 dropped either on the drop zone or near the drop zone, unlike all the others. The 505 was the only one that had a good... marked by the Pathfinders. Those guys had the T lit up and all that. Now, so you guys moved out after you got assembled.
Yeah, we got assembled and we moved out.
And do you...
Zeitner again. Zig Zeitner was the...
he was your platoon sergeant?
That's true.
Now, you guys started moving out towards the...
towards the bridge.
Yeah, towards the bridge. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we started moving towards the bridge and then got fired upon.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you, one thing that I remember more than anything is you hear when you first time you hear a tank.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was coming up in a little while.
Yeah,
now, on the way to the bridge, I guess Captain Stefanich got wounded. I guess he got hit.
Yeah.
It also set off, I guess, one of his smoke grenades or something like that. Did you see that happen?
No.
I see. And
the time I saw Stefanich after the jump was when I was in the hospital. He was in the hospital right next to us. They were close by.
Yeah.
He came in to see us. You know, talked to all those guys.
Uh-huh. Now... when you guys got down there near the bridge, what did you do?
Well, first you assemble, get together, and then Zeke more or less designated each one of us what we had to do.
Uh-huh. And did you guys just dig in?
Digging in. We didn't dig in at all.
What did you do? You just take up some positions behind the hedgerow?
Behind the hedgerows.
And
in some cases, you're almost an open field.
Yeah. Now, shortly after you guys got situated, I guess you heard these tanks coming across the causeway there. What do you remember about that?
I turned around to Zeke and I said, "Boy, what's that?" I said, "Man, that's something." So one of the guys actually knocked out a tank. I believe it was Gonzalez, but he wasn't in our platoon, so yeah.
Now, there was a big fight right there near the bridge. A company, I guess, did most of the damage on the Germans. Do you remember, were you in a position to...
I was in a position near A company. All I know is we were going across this field behind hedgerows. You know, that's all it was, uh-huh. Open fields with hedgerows. Uh-huh. And boy, we got hit. They were throwing all those mortar shells at us.
Yeah, I knew that you guys got hit with mortars and artillery and everything.
And we kept going. I remember one guy, his name was Wendell Angel.
Uh-huh.
His name was A-N-G-E-L-L.
Uh-huh.
And actually, he used to cut the hair for the guys. Well, a haircut. I don't know where he learned how to cut hair.
Uh-huh.
But he got hit very badly, and he was bleeding profusely, and he was right in one of those hedgerows there, and I told him, I said, "Come, why don't you just stay here?" Well, you know, he said, "Oh, boy, if I stay there, I get killed." He kept going. Dude, boy, he went to the hospital. You know, you could stick your hand, and they sent him back. Sent him back later on after you could put your finger down in the skull.
Now, what else do you remember about what happened on D-Day?
Well, that's the first guy that I saw killed was a young boy, about 17, 18 years old, I guess.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't with that guy. He was with mother was a French kid that had more or less been assimilated in with the Germans, or whether it was one of those German youth guys, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I think he's the first one I saw killed, and then they told me he had to be killed. He was throwing hand grenades at us.
Uh-huh. So the next day, the Germans made a second attack across that causeway, and there was a 57-millimeter gun that was in the road that was covering the bridge, and its crew had been pretty much killed or wounded, my understanding was Lieutenant Johnson and a few other guys from C Company manned that gun. Did you see that or know anything about it?
No, I really don't.
And the Germans came across that causeway and were stopped again. Did you see any of that? Or?
Yeah, we got quite a few of them. We were in a big fight going across this field.
Uh-huh.
And they come out of sort of like a wooded area towards us, and boy, we nailed them.
Well, that may have been an attack that you guys made later after the 7th, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, I know on the 10th of June, you guys moved north to attack this little area called Monteborg Station, which is a little train station. What do you mean?
Right around there. At one time, I don't know exactly when, is when I got hit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened.
I got hit with a shrapnel from a mortar, an 88 or whatever it was. I don't know.
Uh-huh. And you were just in the middle of the field moving across.
Yeah, and the medic came over, and I thought I got hit bad in the hip.
Uh-huh.
I got hit by a piece of shrapnel right where the water canteen did it.
Uh-huh.
Got hit there. I said, "Never mind my arm. Look at my hip." And there was nothing on my hip.
Gee.
Got hit there.
So you were wounded in the arm and the hip?
No, just the arm.
I see. The shrapnel hit what? A canteen on your hip?
Yeah, that's what hit me. But it really banged me. That's what I say. I thought I got hurt bad there.
Uh-huh. And. So, what happened? Did you get evacuated?
They took me to the beach.
Uh-huh.
And they put you on a stretcher and sent you to England.
Do you remember what date that was?
I was there either 5 or 6 days. I think close to me.
I see.
One day it goes into another.
Sure. You get moved back to hospital in England, was that when you were visited by Captain Stefanich later?
No. Uh-huh.
I see. And when were you able to be discharged from the hospital and returned to the company?
Oh, I guess it was a couple of weeks I was there.
I see.
In the hospital, I don't know the exact amount of days.
Uh-huh.
But they treated us like, I don't know what, beautifully. I tell you, you can't imagine. Uh-huh. In fact, one of the nurses, I was laying there in the bed at night, and all of a sudden I woke up, and here she is leaning over me, and I said, what's the matter? She said, no, you just reminded me of somebody I knew, and she went in town, bought me shirt and a few other things to put on. But then, you know, I didn't have any changes.
Uh-huh.
That's the way they were.
I see.
Beautiful people.
So after a couple of weeks, you got released and went back
to the 82nd.
Now, had the division returned from Normandy by then?
I think, yes, either then or directly after. The only thing you mentioned here about a being talked to by when you come back to the company.
Uh-huh.
Well, there was a major Cannonball Krause.
Uh-huh.
He was from the 2nd Battalion. And he, I never forgot what he said. He said, you know, everybody that had just come back, he got us all together and he gave us a speech.
Uh-huh.
He said, look, I don't want you guys to think you're heroes just because you got hit or you may have escaped.
Uh-huh.
He said, when you got hit, you couldn't fight.
Yeah.
That was Cannonball Krause.
he was something else.
Yeah, he got killed later on.
No, he actually made it through the war. He died of cancer after the war.
Sure?
Yeah, I think you're thinking about Barnett. Carpenter. Carpenter was the one that drowned in the river up there on the Rhine.
I heard it down board Krause got killed.
Yeah, no, he actually lived after the war until about, I think, 63, and he died of cancer. Tell me about getting ready for the jump in Holland.
Well, that was, you know, we knew we were going to jump. We were given plenty of time and get ready for that. And, again, that was a daytime jump.
Yeah. Well, how did you feel about a daytime jump?
Well, actually, as far as the jump itself, it wasn't that bad because, again, I think I mentioned to you, we had P-47s more or less cover for it.
Uh-huh. And
yeah, very good cover going in.
And what do you recall on the actual jump coming out of the plane?
Well, I think I told you, Edward R. Murrow was in the airplane.
Wow.
And he did the whole thing, made the broadcast from airplane.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, that's the other thing. I think I forgot. Maybe you could get a hold of this. They did make a movie, I don't know what you would call it, of being prepared for that jump.
Uh-huh.
And it was all on our plane. In fact, I happened to see it. I don't know where they showed it one time.
Wow.
And, you know, they showed me and all the guys getting ready and getting into the plane.
Gee.
Now, he was in, at that time, we didn't know he was going with us.
Uh-huh.
Edward R. Murrow.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, during the flight, he comes along asking everybody down the line where we were. You know, did I jump in Italy? He asked me. I said, no.
Wow.
You know, I jumped from then.
Now,
it's a beautiful, I'll tell you, if I can ever get those done, it's a beautiful recording. He goes through the whole thing about what it looked like when we jumped, what the landscape was like, and if they had done some flooding there to try to get, you know, to drown us.
Uh-huh.
But it's a beautiful recording.
Let's see.
Somebody must have that. I can't imagine nobody else had.
And he jumped with you?
Oh, no. He went back with a plane.
I see. Yeah, I've got a book here, and it's got Edward R. Murrow's report that he gives for the jump. So I've got his words at least in writing written down here. What I need to probably do is send you some pictures of you guys getting ready for the jump. It's probably your stick that he took the pictures of.
I realized it afterwards, years later, that they must have put a hell of a lot of out of the guys and jumping out of planes, because Edward R. Miller was so well known.
Uh-huh.
They would actually want him to go with, in case something happened, it would be with a good outfit.
Sure.
So I guess we were picked. The airplane was picked to for him to go in.
Now, after you come out of the plane and your parachute opens, what do you remember seeing as you were floating down?
Nothing. The main thing I saw is we didn't see much on the ground. Outside of a lot of activity because, again, I think I told you, we were designated to clear the landing zone for the gliders.
Uh-huh.
That was our job.
Yeah, that was... On September 18th, the Germans had come in during the night and slipped out there and occupied the landing zone for the gliders. And you guys got word.
Well, we had the landing zone. What happened? One of the gliders went off base into where the Germans were.
Uh-huh. Okay, tell me.
That's what happened. And stuff went over there with some of the guys to try to save the guys.
Uh-huh.
And that's when he got killed.
Did you see that happen?
No.
Did you see the
guy? I wasn't with the group that he took with him.
I see. Were you with Dutch Schultz over on the tree line that day?
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, because I think.
Schultz.
Yeah, I think Schultz talks about. Lieutenant Johnson, I guess, carrying Steph to a barn or something.
Can you confirm that? I somebody told me the same thing when we were there.
Yeah, I'm trying.
And Steph carried in his arms, and I was he carried Steph in his arms and said, couldn't believe that Steph could ever get killed.
That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to.
But I talked to Johnson about that, and he said, no, I wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know whether that's true or not, but I know somebody did.
Well, if
but you're telling me exactly how it happened.
Uh-huh. Now, Lieutenant Johnson's no longer alive, right?
No, he died recently.
I see.
Not too long ago. I guess about a year ago.
I see. What did you... feel when you heard that Stefanich had been killed?
Well, I was demoralized. I think everybody was. You felt the same way.
Uh-huh.
Nobody could believe Steph could get killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was more or less like a legend.
Uh-huh.
You just couldn't imagine.
Oh, sure. Talladay took over the company.
Yeah.
And you guys... had some pretty heavy fighting on the 20th of September, which would have been 2 days after those gliders came in. What do you remember about that?
Oh, it was right heavy fighting. It was quite bad. In fact, one of our squads, they were removed from us somewhere, and I forget which lieutenant it was. He wanted a couple of guys to go with him to try to get contact back, and I remember I was one of the ones, and I guess about three other guys, I don't remember their name.
Uh-huh.
But we went with a lieutenant, and we finally saw our guys. And then we were going past, I never forget this, this is one of the things that stands with me. We were going past this, there was a couple of guys in a, I guess another foxhole, it was where some, had the artillery landed and made a big hole there.
Uh-huh.
And they were sort of using that as a dugout.
Uh-huh.
And the lieutenant said, do you guys want to stay there with them, or going to come along with me because there were the other fellows there. And I said, no, we'll go with you. So on the way back, those guys were dead.
Gee.
Guys, the thing went right in there and hit them.
So if you'd stayed there, you'd probably be dead.
Yeah.
Gee.
That
had to give you a chill up your spine thinking that you could have, you came that close to being killed like that.
But I'll tell you, I don't resent or look back and say, gee, this was bad or that was bad. I don't think any of the guys I was in the service with do.
Uh-huh.
All I do is look back at the good times I had.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine if you talk to most of the guys in the C Company, that's what they tell you, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think people try to just remember the good and kind of...
I don't know. I just never thought about it. When I come home, I did like they always said to some of the guys that say on TV.
Uh-huh.
Like my uncle, when I went in town, I bought a suit, took my uniform off, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recall that day on the 20th, any Germans attacking your position? I mean, you know, you got...
We had to guard that bridge there.
Uh-huh.
That was our main thing, make sure that bridge wasn't taken down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that... after
Nagin Bridge.
Yeah, that was a little bit later, but...
that was our big thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and after you guys left, some frogmen came down and they blew part of the railroad bridge into the river.
Well, another thing that struck me about that, I don't know whether I mentioned this, but you know, you hear so much when you're a civilian and about how the Germans were against the Catholics and against, you know, religion and all that.
Uh-huh.
And all the homes I went into in Nijmegen, I think every one of them was Catholic.
Yeah, yeah. They were mostly Catholic.
Mostly Catholic. Yeah. Yeah. We went to a church there.
Now, what else do you remember about the campaign in Holland?
Well, I'll tell you, I spent more time in Holland than any other campaign.
Uh-huh.
I remember one time. We were out on a point, there was about three other guys and I, and we were out on the point, and we got under heavy fire, and we had a hold then, and one of the things I remember there is, well, two things, is that shooting tracer bullets exactly where I was. Man, when you know they're shooting those tracer bullets and they're aimed directly at you,
uh-huh,
you know something heavy's going to come in after that.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. I remember saying, boy, it was really rough, and we were really under heavy fire. I remember why something going through my mind, why, how's the oil coming over here? Why isn't some of it going over there? You know, you get these thoughts in your mind.
Oh, yeah.
But, that got strafed.
Uh-huh.
And boy, I'll tell you, other than the tank, I think that'll wake you up more than anything.
It was a German plane that did the strafing?
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, you hear that stuff. I mean, it's just like a jackhammer in the street. I'll tell you, those bullets hit the ground.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you go out on any patrols during the holiday?
Oh, no, well, I told you we were... Well, I could go get those other guys. That's where I was on a patrol then.
To get what other guys?
Remember I told you, part of the troop got away. They were somewhere else, and we didn't know
where they were. Yeah, that was clear in the drop zone. But I meant, did you guys go out on any night patrols? Any patrols at night to capture enemy prisoners or anything like that?
Well, we had prisoners, and well, in one place here they mentioned that it's odd because they... You mentioned a lot of the things that I was there, and I wouldn't know names or anything. But those brick kilns,
uh-huh,
yeah, we were in those things. We'd go in there for protection from anything coming in.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I remember we used to, when we had a chance to have a little time off, we weren't going anywhere, just holding the area. we'd go in there with a candle and play cards.
Yeah, well, you had to have some, you know, some time to do stuff like that, to just kind of, you know, pass the time and to relieve some of the stress.
Yeah. In fact, I still have a deck of cards we use.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
I have a deck of cards, yeah.
Gee. Now, you guys got pulled out of there the 11th of November after you were relieved by the Canadians. And,
yeah.
And you were...
actually, yeah, I don't know what happened, but we never had that much to do with the Canadian... I don't know. They were always like a dress out as far as we were concerned. But, you know, it's amazing. Tom Brokaw, he was talking about the great generation, you know, and he happened to mention the 82nd being in Arnhem. We weren't in Arnhem.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
The British were in Arnhem.
Yeah, I know. He is not very good in terms of a historian, but he's a good storyteller.
He got on my crap list. I tell you, I hate to say it that way.
Yeah.
But I was listening to him. Remember when... Reagan went to Pittsburgh or whatever it was.
The German cemetery, yeah.
Yeah, remember when he went there? He's describing there was a top anchor, and he said, well, there's some old World War II general with Reagan. I think he's some old World War II general. You know who it was?
Who?
General Ridgway.
Gee.
I recognized him right away, yeah.
Yeah.
You think he would have researched who was going to be with Reagan.
Yeah.
You know how much of a commotion that thing made. It was General Ridgway.
That's true. Now, you guys got shipped to Sweeps, France.
Yeah, Sweeps.
And you stayed there for a little over a month. What do you remember about the time you spent there?
You go through where you turned and all. You're talking about the time before the bulge?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we turned in all our equipment. You do your daily chores, you know, things you're doing.
Did you get a pass to go into town? Or?
Yeah, I got passes to go in town. That always works out there.
Sure.
You know, you guys are, in fact, I'll never forget the one time. What they call it, diarrhea, like GI craps, they used to call it.
Uh-huh.
I never had it all the time I was in the service, but I had a pass to go to Paris, and another guy and I from our company, they send two guys from each company every week or so, and we went into Paris, but on the way in, we had to had the truck stop because we had dysentery.
Gee. Yeah.
And they wanted to throw us off. The other guys, leave them there. We were taking up their time. You know.
Now, the 17th of December, that night, you guys, the officers began to get alerted, and then I guess about 2 a.m. on the 18th, they came in and got you guys out of your bunks.
You know, I heard it on the radio. That's when I knew the ball chat. I heard it on the radio.
When did you know, how were you told, and when did you find out that the division...
Well, I heard it on the radio that they had a breakthrough.
Yeah, but I meant that...
And they came and told us, you know, I had to get ready.
But how were you told that the division was going to be moving out?
No, they just said, get ready. We issued we had turned in all of our equipment.
Yeah.
And we had to get all of our equipment back.
Uh-huh.
And from the time that they told us, we had on trucks, and we were on the front lines in 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
I know. Well, you guys had actually arrived in Werbelmont, I guess, late.
I heard the name of the town.
Yeah, on the 18th, and you got off the trucks, and then you marched the next morning to a town on the way to the Somme River, and then by the evening or the morning of the 20th, you guys were on the Somme River there.
I tell you, that's one of the roughest times I've ever had.
What do you remember when you were on that line on the Somme River? What do you remember about that? Were you near a bridge? Were you guys trying to defend a bridge?
Number one, you know, we thought we were going to get covered by planes, and they couldn't come in. We were socked in.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was too hazy or whatever it was. They couldn't fly.
Yeah.
And I tell you, we were really taking it. But the thing is, you can't, even the cold weather gets you, you know, that's what gets you more than anything else.
Yeah.
Guys. In fact, one of the things I prize more than anything else is a letter a guy wrote me. You know, he wanted to thank me for carrying some of the stuff. And he was sent home. He almost lost his feet.
Oh, yeah, a lot of guys did. Now, you guys were on the Somme River up until Christmas Eve. Did you guys get attacked by the Germans while you were on the river there?
Yeah, we got attacked, but they didn't take anything. They didn't take us.
Uh-huh.
The ones that got hung up was 101st.
Now, but did you guys, in your area, what had personally happened in your...
Well, you know, they shoot at us and we shoot back.
Your mortars
more than anything else.
Did the Germans try to come across?
Oh yeah.
They tried to come across the river.
Oh yeah.
Did any of them make it to the?
No, not that I know.
Was it at night that they came across, or?
Yeah.
I see. And
I remember nighttime. You talk about sleeping. I remember sleeping in the snow, and that's it.
Yeah, that happened a little bit later. Now, that area on the river, was there a bridge there, and did you guys blow the bridge or anything?
No, we didn't. I don't know about any of the other.
I see. Now, on Christmas Eve, you guys withdrew,
yeah.
And there was a platoon left from each company as a rear guard. Were you in that?
Yeah, I was in that. You know what we had to eat that day? One of those chocolate bars. That's where I had all Christmas.
Oh yeah, one of those deep bars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so when did you pull back? Was it early the next morning after the?
Yeah, and that's when I told you I helped this fellow because he. Well, first of all, it was dead winter,
uh-huh.
And heavy trucks had gone in the. Made ruts, deep ruts.
Uh-huh.
So you can imagine frozen deep ruts, and you're walking with all your equipment and all that.
Gee.
Stuff.
So you guys got back and.
That's when we were going back.
Yeah, you guys dug in, and then I guess on about. Well, tell me about Christmas Day.
That's all I remember. You know, we keep saying one of our planes got to give us some cover here.
Yeah.
You know, because we were really getting banged.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you just kept alert, kept firing, and that's it. Trying to keep warm.
Did you get a turkey dinner on the 26th?
No.
Some of the guys did, some of them didn't. Now, on January 3rd, you guys had been in reserve for a while. The 1st Battalion made an attack towards...
Again, now, not too long after that, I can't give you any more than that, because back that time, I had almost pneumonia, and the medic sent me back.
Oh, I see.
Oh.
Gee, now, so you think that was before January 3rd?
Yeah, I think it was.
Was that, well...
I don't know the exact date.
Well, you said you slept in the snow, and that would have probably been right around there, so you may have been involved in that attack.
Well, we all slept. It wasn't only me. I used to kid. It was funny. You know, Southerners, they hate the cold.
Uh-huh.
A couple of guys, they make these little fire things and put their feet in there,
uh-huh.
Try to keep warm.
Gee.
Yeah.
Well, so you probably were in on some of that. On the 3rd of January, C Company made an advance out of a wooded area towards this little village of Rehermont. And,
yeah, well, I think that's where I was out.
I see.
Right there.
I see.
Now, I remember most of that. Of course, one of the guys that used to be at my tent in England, brewed Mynarczyk. Brewed means brother in Polish. He was Polish. His background is Polish. And brewed got killed there.
Gee. So you were out by that time, huh?
Yeah.
I see. So you get evacuated to where? Liège?
Yeah.
And how long were you in the hospital there?
Oh, gee, I guess about 7 or 8 days.
I see.
And I got back to the outfit.
When did you get back to the outfit, do you recall?
Oh, I don't remember exact dates.
Sometimes
you go through one of these depots.
Yeah.
To the hospital, and the thing with the 82nd or any paratrooper, usually if you went through the replacement depot, they'd send you to any infantry outfit or anything like that.
Yeah.
But if you're a paratrooper, they sent you back to your own outfit.
Yeah. The division moved out on the 26th of January and made some attacks toward the Siegfried Line up near Losheimgraben. Were you in that attack? This would have been about the, I guess the 31st of January.
No, I was off by that time.
I see. So you weren't back with the division or back with the guys by that time. So when do you recall catching up with the 505? Was that back at Sweeps?
Yeah, before Sweeps, yeah.
Okay.
Before Sweeps.
Well, where was the 505 at? In Belgium or in Germany? Or when you caught up with them after the hospital?
Gee, I don't remember. I couldn't get it. That's what I'm saying. You have a lot more knowledge about that stuff than I do. I don't remember it.
Well, when you got out of the hospital and you made it back to the 505, you don't remember where they were? Were they in Sweeps or were they out?
Sweeps.
They were where?
In Sweeps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had already come back from the Bulge and...
they were out of the Bulge.
I see.
Rejoined them.
Now, you guys in early April were put on these 48 box cars and sent by train to the Cologne area. And
we had a nice long hike before we got on the trucks, I think, if I remember correctly. Then we were trucked the balance their way.
Now, you guys were on the Rhine River, on the west side of the Rhine River.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that time?
Yeah. Again, I'm trying to think of the Rhine River. We were there. That's when we were cleaning up the area.
Yeah, the Germans...
Around, in other words, making sure we go to all the people in the neighborhood collect guns or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
To clear the area, in other words.
I see. And then you guys got moved out from there up to the Elbe River. And
that's where I was. Yeah.
Made that crossing. What do you remember about that?
Well, I remember we started to go across, and all of a sudden we wound up on a little island or something.
Uh-huh.
But we weren't supposed to be there, but we got across, and we got quite a few prisoners there.
Uh-huh. Do you remember the Germans firing 20-millimeter anti-aircraft stuff at you? Did any of that stuff...
But we got a lot of prisoners, and they didn't put up, I guess, what you call a big resistance there.
Uh-huh.
But we got... I think it was more or less near the end of the war.
Sure. And a lot of Germans were surrendering about that time.
Yeah, I remember at the one time I got a little angry at some of the younger guys that joined the outfit.
Uh-huh.
They were. It was like a joke to them. I said, "Hey, I didn't come this far to have something happen. These guys are prisoners, you know."
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to mistreat them, but don't. In other words, be on your guard.
Oh, sure. What do you remember when you heard the war had ended, that Germany had surrendered?
Well, naturally, I was very happy about it.
Sure. Do you remember how many...
More or less expected it, the way things are going.
Yeah, yeah. How many points did you have at the end of the war? Do you
recall? I know there was points. I couldn't tell you how many I had.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Some guys remember, some guys don't. No big deal.
Yeah, we were in Berlin. I went to Berlin with the guys. So.
And what do you remember about the duty in Berlin?
Being in Berlin?
Yes.
Oh, lively. We put it that way. We were a small, first little town outside of Berlin. We had nice places to sleep and everything. In fact, the big prison camp for all the top Germans was down the road from us, about a mile. All the large, the generals, they were imprisoned there. And the train station there was a train station right nearby. And that was the last stop before you got into Berlin. And then as you go into Berlin, there's this big, I guess, a monument of the first Russian tank that went into Berlin.
Now, did you get shipped home before the division came home?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't. I think I told you that Frank Kinesa and I went to see the parade in New York.
Oh, great.
I was, yeah.
So when did you arrive back in the States?
Well, I arrived back in the States right before Christmas of 45.
I see.
In fact, I could have gone home for Christmas Day. And he said, well, if you go home, you can't process it now. You have to come back.
Yeah.
So I stayed there for Christmas. I figured, I'm not going to go through all that show.
Yeah. You get...
So I got home right after Christmas.
I see. And so how did you and Frank Kinesa make...
He was the first sergeant, Frank Kinesa.
Yeah.
He wasn't with the Alpha or Normandy. I guess he was one of the... I guess he was a first sergeant with another outfit, and then he got transferred over to our company when we went into, I guess about a couple months before we went into Berlin.
Now, how did you and he link up after you got back to the States?
We got to be very close, Frank and I, and we made up our minds we'd get out together, so we did. We went out the same day.
I see.
And when we got back in the States, if it was wintertime, we'd go to Florida for vacation, Miami, with our wife. And if it was summertime, we'd go to Pocono. So when we got out, it was wintertime, so we went on a vacation to Miami. In fact, that's the only vacation I've ever had.
Well, tell me about the Victory Parade and you and he going to see the division march down.
You see the guys that are the replacements. You hardly know anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But I knew Captain Curie, very close to him. And he was the captain. I was he one blind. All right, Captain, you give her away. In fact, it's a funny story. And when we were in Berlin, a lot of the German people, they'd give you anything for like cigarettes or candy or anything like that. And there was money floating around all over the place. Did you ever hear of the Tiergarten? Anybody mention that to you in Berlin?
The beer gardens?
Beer garden.
Yes, yeah.
It's a big park, like.
Yes.
And everybody used to go there and sell things to the Germans, At that time, I had become could have either been a staff sergeant or a mail clerk. So I took the mail clerk because that was the easiest thing. I didn't have to parade or train or anything else,
Sure. Now, what was your rank in Holland? Were you a PFC in Holland?
Yeah, I was a tech corporal.
I see. And then in the Bulge, were you the same rank?
PFC, no.
Okay, so
I was up PSC until I got to be the mail clerk.
I see. Okay.
Because I had my own place to sleep and everything else. With a bull there.
I see. Any recollections about the victory parade other than waving to?
Oh, it was a nice parade, you know. I hated parades, honestly.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that one. You know,
yeah. You weren't having a march
throughout it.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that's the reason I got to be mail clerk. I didn't want to go on any more parades.
Yeah, because there was a lot of that in Berlin, no question about it. Well, Fred, I really appreciate the
Well, you know, in Berlin,
uh-huh.
One of the things I, like Frank and I used to go to Berlin, you know, Center Berlin, we'd go through the, at Brandenburg Gate.
Uh-huh.
We'd go through there over into the Russian sector all the time because that's where they had the good beer for some reason. And we'd go over there and drink and we'd have a hell of a good time with it.
Wow.
You know, the people, they liked us. They hated the Russians.
Yeah. The Americans were looked at totally differently than the Russians, and, you know.
In fact, they thought they were going to join us and fight the Russians.
that was nuts, you know. Well, I sure appreciate the time you spent with me on this interview, and I'll get a copy of this tape and get it in the mail to you here shortly.
Well, I could think of anything. Some of the things I forget, I started to go through them with your, like the first 15 pages or so, that's strictly on Italy. Naturally, I wasn't there. So
sure. But if you think of something else, let me know, and we can put it on the end of this tape, and
okay.
And I'll get a copy of that and get it in the mail to you here in a few days.
Uh-huh.
Well, like I said, I want to thank you for doing this interview.
Oh, my pleasure. It's going to be easy to talk to you.
Well, you're a good interview, and I appreciate the time you spent doing this.
Well. Yeah, you know, I very seldom think of the service, but the guys, they are always with me.
Sure.
Those are, and there's only one thing I think about the war. You know, you want to do the best you can for your country, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, that's what most of those guys, they can give their life any time for their country.
That's right. Well, you guys...
And I see some of that with a bunch of, you know, the soldiers we have now. It's a completely different war. But,
Yeah, they're cut from the same cloth. They really are. Well, thanks again, Fred.